Ken Chanarell from City Hill Church in Eden Prairie. Following the prayer, please remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Good morning. Let's bow our heads in a word of prayer. Almighty God, we humbly come to you this morning. Our nation was founded upon your word, and in your word we read that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. In light of this truth, I ask that you would give your wisdom to our state senators. Our human wisdom is not enough. Our human logic can lead us down wrong paths. But your wisdom, God, is good. Your wisdom brings life. And your wisdom is just. So I pray that the fear of the Lord would be upon each and every senator this morning, and that your holy fear would guide and direct us to make wise and just decisions today. Forgive us for our pride in thinking we can lead this great land without your aid, without your hand, without your presence. And so this morning we invite you to be present with us, even here today, in each and every word we speak. May the words of our mouth and the meditations of our heart be acceptable in your sight, O God, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. United States of America. To the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible.
Nice to meet you. It's a pleasure. Thanks. Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Benson, Bonoff, Brown, Carlson, Chamberlain, Champion, Clausen, Cohen, Dahl, Dames, Dibble, Dietzick, Eaton, Eakin, Fischbach, Franzen, Gazelka, Goodwin, Hall, Han, Herr, Hayden, Hoffman, Housley, Ingebrigtsen, Jensen, Johnson, Kent, Kiffmeyer, Kunin, Latz, Limmer, Lori, Marty, Metzen, Miller, Nelson, Newman, Nino, Ortman, Osmick, Pappas, Peterson J, Peterson B, Pratt, Reinert, Rest, Rosen, Rude, Saxhog, Scalzi, Schmidt, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Sparks, Stumpf, Thompson, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Weber, Westrom, Uyghur, and Wickland.
A quorum is present. We move first to the third order of business, messages from the House. The Secretary will read the messages.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate files herewith returned. Senate file number 857, a bill for an act relating to public safety, establishing a working group to study and make recommendations on establishing a silver alert system. And Senate file number 1478, a bill for an act relating to corrections, repealing the old interstate compact for juveniles. Signed, Patrick D. Murphy, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives. And, Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following House file herewith transmitted. House file number 1947, signed Patrick D. Murphy, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Fourth order of business, first reading of House bills. The following bill, 1947, will be given its first reading. Senator Sieben.
Madam President, I move we lay House file 1947 on the table.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Fifth order of business, reports of committee. Senator Sieben.
Madam President, I move that the committee reports printed in the agenda be adopted.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Second order of business, seventh order of business, second reading of House bills. The bills printed on the agenda will be given their second reading. Eighth order of business, introduction and first reading of Senate bills. The bills listed on today's introduction calendar are given their first reading and referred as indicated. Ninth order of business, motions and resolutions. The motions printed on the agenda, Senate resolution number 160 and 161 will be referred to the Committee on Rules. Senator Sieben.
Madam President, pursuant to Rule 26, I designate that the following bills be made special orders for immediate consideration. And there's a list of bills on members' desks.
Excuse me. The first bill on special orders is number 61 on general orders, House File 1357, Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam President. This is the Certificate of Marriage Dissolution Court Preparation and Submission Requirement Law, Senate File. It's actually House File. We have 1357. Under current law, courts may but are not required to issue a certificate of dissolution at the time a marriage is dissolved, and the statute specifies what information to include in that certificate. This bill requires the court to create a certificate of dissolution but grants the court the ability to direct an attorney or pro se litigant to prepare and submit the certificate to the court. Also, the requirement that Social Security numbers be included on the certificate is stricken, but a requirement that a name change granted in the divorce be included on the certificate is added. This aligns the statute with court rules. On your desk, you have what a application might look like. This is what the application looks like in Wisconsin. But it's very inconvenient for people to have to take their entire divorce decree when they are trying to get a new driver's license or change their credit card, and the divorce decree really reveals too much personal information. So a one-page certificate that has all the necessary information for changing a name without disclosing so much personal information to businesses and government entities is really important to have. And also, it's very costly to make copies. Your divorce decree could be 20, 30 pages long, and this will just be much more convenient. I don't know of any opposition to the bill, and it basically codifies current practice that's already going on in many courts. I'd appreciate your support.
Discussion of House File 1357. Seeing none, the Secretary will give House File 1357 its third reading.
House File number 1357, a bill for an act relating to civil law, requiring certificates of dissolution.
Secretary will take the roll on House File 1357. Members will please vote. All members having voted who desire to vote, Secretary will close the roll. There being 59 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The second bill on special orders is number 97 on general orders, Senate File 1973, Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam President. Senate File 1973 is the annual Department of Corrections bill that covers claims to primarily to inmates that are incarcerated. It appropriates money to the Department of Corrections in fiscal year 16 to cover the cost of claims made by inmates against the department for losses suffered while incarcerated and for medical services that are given that are paid back to providers for people who are injured while performing community services. This is this is one of the smallest bills we've had in this size and in this particular area, and it is completely non-controversial. It's put together by a bipartisan, bicameral group that hears these claims, and I want to thank Senator Osmick and Senator Scalzi for serving on that committee, and I appreciate your support.
Further discussion of Senate File number 1973. Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate File 1973 its third reading.
Senate File number 1973, a bill for an act relating to claims against the state, providing for settlement of certain claims.
Third reading. Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 1973. All members having voted who desire to vote, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 60 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The next bill on special orders is number 24 on general orders, Senate File 113. Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam President and members. The Equal Rights Amendment, the ERA to the U.S. Constitution, was drafted by Alice Paul, a suffragette leader and Republican. The ERA was introduced into every session of Congress between 1923 and 1972, when it was finally passed by Congress and sent to the states for ratification. A deadline for state ratification of March 22, 1979, was set. Before its deadline, 35 of the 38 necessary states ratified the amendment. The ERA was ratified by the Minnesota State Legislature on February 12, 1973. In 78, a joint resolution of Congress extended the ratification deadline to June 30, 1982, but no further states ratified the amendment before the second deadline passed, leaving it 3 states short of the threshold. Many organizations, however, dispute the validity and the permanence of the ratification deadline and continue to work at the federal and state level for adoption of the ERA. This resolution would be an official statement by the Minnesota legislature that would call upon Congress to remove the deadline for ratification of the ERA. The language of the resolution is on your computers, members, and it was the original language of the bill was proposed, as I said, by Alice Paul, who is a well-known Republican and then later founder of the National Women's Party. It was in the Republican platform for many years, I think up until the 1980s. So I would encourage your support for the resolution to Congress. Thank you.
Discussion of Senate File 113. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam President. I have an amendment, A2.
Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Kiffmeyer moves to amend Senate File Number 113 as follows, page 2. This is the A2 amendment.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam President. So, Madam President, the purpose in this amendment is to make sure that it is neutral in regards to abortion. So the language would read that by removing this deadline, that the Equal Rights Amendment must not be construed to grant, secure, or deny any right relating to abortion or the funding of abortion. And, Madam President, we all need to remember that the current Constitution has many court rulings on this subject in a variety of directions. And by placing this in this situation, we put at risk all of those previous court rulings. And so again, just to emphasize, this is to grant, secure, or deny so that it would be a neutral in regards to that area. Madam President, I ask for support for my amendment, the A2. Thank you. And ask for roll call.
Further discussion. Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam President and Senator Kiffmeyer. I just want to make sure that members understand that the whole issue of Roe v. Wade on abortion rights was decided on the constitutional right to privacy under the Due Process Clause of Article 19 of the U.S. Constitution. It was not decided on a base of equality, which is a civil rights issue. Passage and ratification of the ERA will have no effect on the Supreme Court's Roe v. Wade decision. So, members, there's no reason to put this language into the resolution, and I would urge your opposition. Thank you.
Further discussion. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. For those of you who are listening to the discussion today, we heard the comment in opposition to Senator Kiffmeyer's amendment that the Roe versus Wade decision was not based on an equality standard, but yet one of a privacy argument, which is correct. But that was based on the existing Constitution that we have now. If the Equal Rights Amendment would pass, then the Constitution would be different. And then the argument most certainly would attract the attention, if needed, into the U.S. Supreme Court by the concept or the topic of equality rather than just the issue of privacy that was previously decided in 1973.
Further discussion of
Madam President.
A2 amendment. Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam President. I know there are a number of members that are not in the chamber right now that are excused that would really like to vote on this bill, so I would like to lay this on the table at this time.
On the motion to lay the bill on the table, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no.
No.
Motion prevails. The next bill on special orders is number 100 on general orders, House File 385, Senator Franzen.
Thank you, Madam President. House File 385 deals with technical corrections. As you all recall, members, last year we passed a limited liability, revised Uniform Limited Liability Company Act. That's effective on August 1st of this year. And we left enough time to precisely work with stakeholders to make sure that we had any changes that needed to be incorporated prior to the effective date would be done. And throughout the time since we last met for session, the changes to this bill are very technical in nature. They have been approved by the Minnesota State Bar Association and their respective committees, including the Banking Section Committee. And the changes are technical. The first, it reconciles conversions of entities so that they all work together within the framework of the existing body of law. There were some other laws that we passed last year that need to work with the bill, so that's the first change. The second, it corrects cross-references that were erroneously missed. Third, it keeps in place the original bargaining that parties covered by the prior LLC law agreed upon, and this applies to default rules that are different in the revised LLC law than the prior LLC law. And fourth, it provides comfort to lenders and borrowers by bringing in a safe harbor language from the prior LLC law. And lastly, it clarifies certain lien provisions. So members, very technical in nature. I do stand for questions if any member has any. And I should note that, again, the Minnesota State Bar Association and the various committee sections reviewed the changes and are in agreement and that these changes need to be made before the revised LLC law becomes effective on August 1st of this year. Thank you, members.
Discussion of House File 385. Senator Westrom.
Madam President, a question for the author.
Senator Franson yields. Senator Westrom.
Madam President, members, or Senator Franson, my understanding in Finance Committee, we've taken out all the fee increases. Is that correct? So there is no fee increase in this bill, or is there others?
Senator Franson.
Madam President, Senator Westrom, you are correct. We did take the fees out. They're still going to be in place. They're $35. And under the committee that we referenced in the Finance Committee, we made that clear, that distinction, that this bill would not increase fees. So we kept them at that level of the current LLC law.
Further discussion of House File 385. Seeing none, the Secretary will give House File 385 its third reading.
House File Number 385, a bill for an act relating to business organizations, modifying conversion provisions.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam President. Would Senator Franson yield for a question?
Senator Franson yields. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Franson, my question is, does this language include a two-tier voting rights for shareholders?
Senator Franson.
Madam President and Senator Kiffmeyer, I don't believe the changes that we are referencing have anything to do with that particular question that you're asking. If that particular provision was in fact in the bargaining or the LLC documents of an existing company, then that would continue to move forward. I have to note that by January 1st of 2018, all LLC will have to comply with the new revised law. So that might make some more changes there. But if that language is currently in an LLC's documents and agreements, that this bill will not change that. And let me clarify too, Madam President, if I may, I misspoke to Senator Westrom's question. $60 is the fee in its current law. So I just want to make that change and make that clarification.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam President. Well, it's a concern that I have because a two-tier creates two classes of shareholders, and we really don't want to do that. You own a share, each share gets a vote, and that's the same, and I appreciate that you think it's not there. However, I do have concerns about that, so thank you, Madam President.
Further discussion of House File 385. Senator Franson.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Kiffmeyer, the changes that we're moving forward with this bill today have nothing to do with this, what you're referring to. They're all technical changes. I would certainly look back to the bill itself. It's a very lengthy bill that we passed last year with unanimous support. So we're not making any changes that we didn't approve last year as a body.
Secretary will take the roll on House File 385. All members having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 62 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The next bill on special orders is number 78 on general orders, House File 1556, Senator Carlson.
Madam Chair?
Yeah.
Good. Madam Chair.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you. I think we have an error on the list here. I have 1446 as my Senate file language. I see we have the House file. I'm not sure which one that we do address here. But, Madam Chair, this is the month of May was designated.
Senator Carlson, they are identical.
They are identical.
That's why.
We are voting on the House file.
House file. That's
Thank
correct.
You. Thank
Senator
you, Madam
Carlson.
Chair. Madam President. The month of May was designated as Hire a Veteran Month in honor of the more than millions of soldiers who have served in the United States Armed Forces, and of whom over a million have been wounded, and over a million have made the ultimate sacrifice by giving their lives to the country. Whenever called upon, these people I have come out to defend our national security at home and abroad. These men and women serving in the United States Army, Marines, Air Force, and Coast Guard have always responded immediately and effectively, placing national interests above their own. Each year, the governor shall issue a proclamation honoring this observance, urging the Minnesota state and local government departments, agencies, and boards, as well as the private employers, to give fair and appropriate consideration to hiring military veterans. Madam Chair, Department of Military Affairs has designated the month of May, but has since discovered that the month of July is more appropriate for this honor, and have asked that we move the Hire a Veteran month to the month of July. So I'm hoping that I can count on your support for this minor move.
Senator Carlson? Sorry, more further discussion. I came up in the middle, so remind me what's going on here.
I am complete with my explanation, Madam Chair. We're asking to move the Hire a Veteran Month from the month of May to the month of July.
Is there any more discussion? Seeing none, the Secretary will give House File 1556 its third reading.
House File Number 1556, a bill for an act relating to veterans, changing Hire a Veteran Month from May to July.
Secretary will take the roll. All members having voted that desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 59 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed as title agreed to. The next bill on special orders is number 8 on general orders, House File 450, Senator Housley.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that the amendment made to House File 450 by the Committee on Rules and Administration in the report be adopted May 7th, 2015, pursuant to Rule 45, be stricken.
Senator Housley, do you want to just explain what you're doing?
Yep. They passed this Military Spouses and Family Day May 7th in the House. I just would like to adopt the House language.
All right, on that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Senator Housley.
Thank you, Madam President. This bill honors military spouses and family who stand behind those who stand behind our flag, giving their all and making tremendous sacrifice. They shoulder the burdens of countless moves and stressful deployment, and they uphold their end of the bargain. On Military Spouse and Family Day, we would like to celebrate the force behind the force and show these heroes that they have full support of those of us back home. This bill would make the Sunday immediately preceding Memorial Day as designated Military Spouses and Family Day in honor of the vital support and sacrifices that the spouses and families of military personnel make for the betterment and support of this country. Each year, the governor shall issue a proclamation honoring this observance. I ask for your full support.
Is there any discussion? Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam President. I, too, urge your support on this bill. I think a bill that supports and encourages the support of families and what they do, not only for the military, for police, for legislators. The family is always such a pillar and the backbone of what gets done, and they sacrifice with others. And so I think this is a tremendous thank you, Senator Housley, for putting this bill up.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam President and members, and I appreciate Senator Housley bringing this forward. Minnesota military families face a unique situation. Our Red Bulls are renowned throughout the military for the work that they do. Our National Guard is one of the few ready-to-go divisions at all times. But we don't have a central base where there's a PX or a commissary where families get together and meet. Our military families are scattered throughout the state. So unlike those families that are assigned to a base, they don't have immediate support. And so we, as members of the legislature and as citizens of the state, have the unique opportunity to stand in to support our military members and their families. And if we can take one day out of the year to think about them in an extra special way, to make sure that we realize that when their spouse, parent is deployed, their driveways still need to be shoveled, the kids still need to be taken places, they would appreciate a meal being brought to their home. So I thank you, Senator Housley, for bringing this bill forward. And as a former military spouse myself, I can tell you, members, the families keep our military strong, and this is the least we can do to thank them for their work.
Senator Reinert.
Thank you, Madam President, and thank you, Senator Housley, for bringing this bill forward. I would just take a moment to build on what Senator Benson said. You know, members, throughout Minnesota, we have people serving on active duty. We have our Guard members that Senator Benson referenced, the Red Bulls. And then we have reservists. And the reservists especially, and this is something I know a little bit about, are continuing to deploy, perhaps not at the pace that we were used to over the past decade, but are continuing to deploy. And they often do that as solo augmentees. And while we all recognize when a unit from our community goes, when the 148th from Duluth deploys, we know. And we rally around them as a community, and we offer our care and support for those spouses and families and dependents that remain behind. But I will share with you, members, what is really difficult is when you deploy as a team of one. Your community may not know. Your organizations, your support network may not know. But your family does, your spouse does, your children do. So any opportunity we have to recognize those that end up picking up the household burden, the family burden, the community burden for 6, 9, 12 months, is well warranted. So thank you, Senator Housley, and members for support of this.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam President. Well, as a spouse and as a family member to many soldiers who have served over the years, both brothers and sisters and my dad and so on, the one thing I always recognized was that the soldier would be very quick to say that it was only that they were able to do this is because they had the support of their family, whether it's moms and dads, grandmas and grandpas, spouses, brothers, sisters, it all took that. Matter of fact, it's been said before that for every soldier that's on the front line, you know, there are legions back home, the supply line, just even within the military to enable a soldier on the front line, but so within their own families. And so it's very appropriate at this time, and I really want to thank Senator Housley for bringing this forward, to have an official recognition of the spouses and the families and have a special day for them. And I know this is something that our soldiers would support as well. They get that due recognition. So I urge your support. Thank you, Madam President.
Is there any more discussion on House File 450? The Secretary will give House File 450 its third reading.
House File Number 450, a bill for an act relating to the military, establishing Military Spouses and Families Day.
Secretary will take the roll. All members having voted that desire to vote, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 62 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and is title agreed to. The next bill on special orders is number 99 on general orders, Senate File 362, Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, Senate File 362 is a bill that designates the Veterans Honor and Remember flag as a symbol of recognition for fallen military service members. The bill encourages the display of the flag on governmental buildings or facilities within this state to display the honor and remember flag on specified days. The bill allows any named public office or public official to accept a donation of one or more honor flags for the purposes of this section, notwithstanding statutory gift bans. The flag is mentioned, is on your desk. It shows, pass this out here, honor and remember. And it gives the symbolism of the different fields, the red field, the white field, the blue star, the gold star, the folded flag, and the flame. And we had many individuals come to testify for veterans from the Marine Corps, from the Army, and others who are supporting the Honor and Remember flag. This flag basically is an encouragement. It also allows for families who are Gold Star mothers and families to ask for a flag to be given to them in recognition of their fallen son or daughter. And it was quite emotional to hear some of the testimony. In fact, as I was getting prepared for this, I was looking back on some of the history, and I remember in Finance Committee that Senator Lori mentioned that his brother Matthew had been killed in Iraq back in 2005. And also, just recently, members from the area of New London Spicer, Ryan Clark, and from Owatonna, Caleb Erickson, who have given their lives for the freedoms of this country and behalf of their communities, on their families, and for this state. I appreciate your support and stand for any questions. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Are there any questions? Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Madam President. As I vote for this bill, I do so remembering my best boyhood friend, Michael Lane Koskovich, Hayfield, Minnesota, Chief Warrant Officer, killed in Vietnam February 8th, 1968.
Thank you, Senator Senjum. Is there any other discussion? Seeing no further discussion, the Secretary will give Senate File 362 its third reading.
Senate File Number 362, a bill for an act relating to veterans, designating the Honor and Remember flag as an official symbol of the state's commitment to military service members who have lost their lives in service to our country.
Secretary will take the roll.
Went to the same church for quite a while. We sat right next to each other for many Sundays. Yeah.
All members having voted that desire to vote, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 61 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and is title agreed to. I'm going to skip over House File 1535 for now and go to number 92 on general order, Senate File 1757, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President and members. Senate File 1757 amends language in the Lodging Establishment Clause to include a very specific sector of public establishments which exclusively serve medical patients. Senate File 1757 seeks to aid patients, their families, and caregivers who are seeking long-term housing while receiving or awaiting medical treatments. Medical communities like Rochester, St. Paul, Minneapolis, Robbinsdale, Duluth see a growth in long-term medical visitors, especially destination cancer and transplant patients. For example, members' transplants have evolved from the time where there were 100 days of in-hospital treatment to now they're actually outpatient procedures. However, the patients need to remain within 10 miles or 15 minutes of the medical facility for 100 days. New proton beam cancer therapies require that patients receive daily treatments for extended periods of time. Patients and their families, especially when young children are involved, sometimes seek a home-like setting. And as a result, we need to address the way these non-typical lodging establishments are licensed, inspected, and insured. And Senate File 1757 would clarify that these types of establishments that are advertised and furnished exclusively for patients, their families, and caregivers, while the patient is receiving or waiting to receive health care treatments or procedures, are indeed lodging establishments that are properly insured, licensed, and inspected and meet those higher standards. There has been no known opposition to this bill, and there is no fiscal cost. I would encourage a green vote, and I stand for questions.
Is there any discussion? See no discussion. Oh, Senator Westrom.
Madam President, members, this seems like a fairly straightforward bill, narrowly crafted for just this specific industry. But members, I rise with concern or objection in the sense that it's one more license for one more aspect of the private sector. that I would argue currently is going on without a license for individuals that, let's just suggest, they might go to Arizona for the winter and want to rent out their home, and it happens to be in the area of medical transplant patients or folks that are receiving medical treatment. Now it would be a new license we're requiring for those folks. And so I can understand some may want to be licensed and be able to advertise it that way. But then it should be an opt-in or an optional license if that's how they want to do it over the current industry. And so I suggest that we just hold back on this and not add one more license or criteria for folks engaging in this area of rental or lodging to be subject to an inspection and a new license fee. And what it does is it fences out anybody else that doesn't now go through this new hoop. And I think we lessen the choices for families that might be coming into an area. Of course, Senator Nelson, I understand with Rochester, that is a big sector of that economy. And we've got other communities, certainly St. Cloud, the Twin Cities, Duluth, that would probably be subject to having long-term health care residents or lodging or tenancies in those communities if it's a long procedure for a medical reason. But for that reason, members, I just suggest this opens up the door, and with the internet nowadays, folks are able to look at lots of lodging or rental options depending upon their need. And I don't think we should subject folks to more license fees and potentially narrow down the marketplace of what somebody looking for this type of housing might be able to buy otherwise. And so I would rise in opposition to this bill. I understand, and as I've acknowledged, it certainly is narrowly crafted, but that's how the camel's nose always gets under the tent, and I would urge us to not do that.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President. I have just a quick comment and reassurance for Senator Westrom, and then I do have a technical amendment, Madam President. Senator Westrom, I would like to assure you that this legislation is crafted only to those places who exclusively advertise, maintain, and are rented out as medical facilities, medical lodging facilities, specifically advertised to those and only available to those who are seeking medical treatment while they are seeking medical treatment. So it is indeed a very narrowly crafted bill, and it would not in any way infringe upon the public's ability to find any type of housing that they would so choose. But when we are talking about patients who are looking for housing during specific highly sensitive treatments like transplant cancer treatment, I think we serve them well in allowing them to know that this lodging has been inspected by the health department.
Members, it's just getting too noisy in the chamber. Senator Nelson, proceed.
Yes, thank you, Madam President. So with those assurances, Senator Westrom, it is very tightly crafted. And Madam Chair, I have the A2 amendment, which is a very technical amendment.
The Secretary will report the A2 amendment.
Senator Nelson moves to amend Senate File Number 1757 as follows, page 1, and this is the A2 amendment.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President. As I said, this is a technical amendment. It just uses the word as defined under instead of licensed under, because those sections do not contain licensure.
On the A2 amendment, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Is there any more discussion? Senator Westrom.
Well, Madam President, Senator Nelson, if I understand your assurance correctly, so somebody, a business in Rochester, for example, or a private person. Let's just talk about a private person that goes to Arizona for the winter. As we all know, they're called snowbirds around here. They choose to rent their place out for 4, 5, 6 months of the year when they're gone. So long as they advertise to rent it out, and they might rent it to some medical patient that's getting a transplant that needs to be there for an extended period of time. If I understood you right, Senator Nelson, if you'll respond to this, that person, as long as they're advertising it to the general public, but some medical patient rents it from them, they aren't going to be subject to this new license. But if they are only advertising to medical transplant patients, then they would be subject to this license. Am I understanding your intent and your correct recapture of this legislation?
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President, and Senator Westrom, for that very good question. I believe the operative word here, no pun intended, is furnished exclusively to patients, their families, and caregivers. So these are only places that are rented to or leased to patients, their families, and caregivers, and at the very time that they are receiving treatment or waiting for treatment. And also they need these places that would fall under this amended lodging definition also need to be within 10 miles or 15 minutes of a medical center. So again, it is very narrowly crafted. It has been an interesting time actually crafting this legislation to make sure that it only focuses on the intended target and is no broader. And I believe that's what we have today.
Senator Westrom.
So, Madam President, Senator Nelson, if you would yield for this following question.
She will yield. Senator Westrom.
Senator Nelson, so it's exclusively for those patients, but what about a scenario where somebody does rent their facility out to a patient that meets that definition, but that's not what they're exclusively renting their facility for? It's just a matter of first come, first serve, whoever was qualified, and it happens to be a medical patient that rented their furnished house. Of course, in my example, they are down in Arizona for the winter and renting their house out to a needing family that has a health or medical issue, let's say in Rochester. Would they be viewed as being exclusively renting to that medical patient because they happen to be one of the people renting for a month or two in their own residence, if you follow me?
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President, and Senator Westrom. I do appreciate the question because that is the exact dialogue that we had. And the bill, as originally introduced, did not include the word exclusively as. And because of the very concern that you mentioned today, those words have been previously amended into the bill. So again, it's a very narrow focus only on those lodging facilities that are advertised, maintained, let out, and furnished as. Those are the words that are currently in the lodging statute, exclusively to these three categories of people: patients, their families, their caregivers, during a very specific time, the time in which they are receiving treatment or waiting for treatment. And it must be in a very specific location, 10 miles or 15 minutes from the medical center. So again, very narrowly crafted. Thank you, Senator Westrom.
Senator Westrom.
Madam President, Senator Nelson, and I think the answer is yes, but I just want to verify. If a private party chose to rent out their property while they were in Arizona, and the person that rented it happened to be in that criteria you've listed, would they be allowed to rent their facility to that patient because they are receiving medical treatment, or would they now be subject to the new license because they happen to take this tenant that is receiving medical treatment? Can you clarify that for me, because I'm a little concerned that maybe this language does narrow it to the point where that person, although they didn't advertise it exclusively for medical patients, happens to rent to a medical patient. And if they do, are they now subject to this new license and new fee and or barred from renting to that patient?
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Westrom, the intent of this legislation is not to cover the exact example that you described. And in particular, we had great discussions about that, which is why, again, the word exclusively was added. So the triggering things are that the lodging is advertised, maintained, furnished exclusively for medical use. Under the scenario, the hypothetical that you addressed, Senator Westrom, that would not be the case.
Senator Westrom.
So, Madam President and members, Senator Nelson, thank you for that clarification. While it doesn't probably get me to support your bill, I do appreciate what you're trying to do, and if it's going to pass, I guess I would at least suggest you've narrowed it quite specifically to a specific type of tenant or person seeking lodging in those medical situations. Of course, some of our towns wouldn't have that type of medical treatment, and others would. But members, maybe this is a good opportunity to talk more broadly about just what regulations can do or not do. And my concern, or the broader concern, is, you know, with the Internet, we have seen a revolution of how small businesses can find new customers, can market, can take something and that they own or decide to purchase and make more of a business out of it. We just had a bill earlier this session dealing with Uber, and certainly there is a tension between current taxi cabs, your traditional taxi cab delivery service, versus Uber, which is now only made available because of the technology that we all experience in our day with the Internet, with smartphones, and we are seeing that in all kinds of industries. And so as we set up more licenses, more fees, and inspections, it just makes it harder for the entrepreneur, the private family member, the private person, the private sector, from being able to do a part-time or a new style business as the market might have a demand. And ultimately, that's how the market works. People come up with creative ideas that are either better than what's being offered, less expensive than what is being offered, or a different way to deliver it. And we shouldn't have to license everything or have it inspected or have a government fee that goes along with new market ideas, new niches that people find in the private sector. And that's my broader concern, because while this is narrow, that is a stifling aspect to expanding business opportunities for the new entrepreneur. It's easy for big business to deal with government regulations and licenses, and it's not that much of their time or revenue, but it's the small business that always gets hurt the worst by a new license, a new fee, a new inspection, and that's the concern I have. And ultimately, you narrow the marketplace and the options for the consumers that are looking for this type of housing. And so with the Internet, with companies out there, or the Internet's out there, there's I just became aware of another one over the Easter recess, and found out from some constituents how they are renting out their house from time to time when they are gone. And there's websites out there through and through that exclusively do this type of thing. I wasn't even aware of it. And so it's amazing to me, every so many weeks or months, you come across new opportunities that people have discovered through the Internet and the fact that that technology is now available to us in the 21st century. And so I share those concerns as we look at this bill. And Senator Nelson, I understand what you're trying to do. I'm sorry I can't support you on this one.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. Would the author of the bill yield for a question?
Senator Nelson will yield. Senator Limmer.
Madam President, and Senator Nelson, as I look at this bill, and I'm a little familiar with real estate rental agreements and all, the way I read your bill is that this bill recognizes a very narrow customer or user of someone's property. And that narrow user is qualified by the medical treatment that they are getting in a nearby hospital or medical facility, but they need to be in the immediate area for a long period of time. And that in this case, the property to be used rather than a hotel room, which sometimes cannot accommodate that individual's family that so often wants to be with them, is going to use someone's, let's say, a home, and you want to classify that home into the lodging category that's in existing law. And as a result of that, it also has to meet some medical standards of cleanliness and all the other things that the medical standards would require for a person in a deficient health standard themselves. Let's say a cancer patient who has a very low immune system that they are now experiencing due to medical treatment or perhaps a disease. So the way I read this, I don't think this is used for a really broad purpose. It's used for a very narrow purpose of a person who needs medical treatment to accommodate the family in a nearby facility that is something different than a hospital bed or a hotel across the street from a hotel. Am I getting that right, Senator Nelson?
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President, and Senator Limmer. You are exactly right. The bill is so very narrowly crafted, both in its use, the patients, the people who would be falling under this statute, and also the structures that would fall under this amended statute. So, again, it is very, very narrow. And, members, I'll tell you, it's very important to those families who, in the cases of brain cancer, for example, where the in this case, a father undergoing severe and difficult treatments wanted to make sure that his one-year-old child was there with him during this very difficult time. And there are cases like that where families really want to be together as families in a residential setting, and yet they're undergoing very difficult long-term medical treatments and therapies. And this legislation merely gives them the assurance that these lodging facilities do, in fact, fall under lodging and are inspected as such and licensed and insured as such. So it's very much a pro putting the needs of the patient first, and it does not infringe at all upon the concerns that Senator Westrum had about finding lodging online or who would fall under it. Again, we've worked with counsel very tightly on this and the department to make sure that it is very narrowly crafted, and I believe that's the bill we have before us today.
Is there any more discussion on Senate File 1757? Seeing no further discussion, the Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File Number 1757, a bill for an act relating to health, modifying the definition of lodging establishment.
Secretary will take the roll.
got half the caucus against her.
All members having voted that desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 49 ayes and 13 nays, the bill is passed and is title agreed to. The next bill on special orders is number 102 on general orders, House File 1792, Senator Eakin.
Thank you, Madam President and members. This bill deals with receiverships of nursing homes. Currently, the Department of Health does have authority to obtain receivership authority over nursing homes when the life and safety of the residents is threatened. This is a very rare action. It's an action of last resort. Does not happen very often. As most members know, it did happen last week. Two facilities were taken into receivership in Owatonna and Faribault. But in the previous 10 years, there have only been four receiverships affecting five different facilities. So again, it's very rare. But this legislation is very important in protecting those more vulnerable citizens in our nursing homes when emergency situation does emerge. Some of the things that it does, it tries to expedite the process because time is of essence. And one of the things it does is it reduces the amount of time to get a judgment because it has to be court-ordered from 5 days, requiring the judge to issue an order within 2 days. It also requires that the Department of Health keep a list of potential managing agents who would actually manage the day-to-day operations of the nursing home when it falls into receivership. And right now, there is no such requirement, and because of that, it can take time to find a managing agent who can perform those responsibilities. So by having a list, they can cut that time down as well. It also allows the department to just serve notice to the administration of the nursing home. Right now, they're required not only to notify the administration of the nursing home, but also the owners and the licensees, which sometimes are located in other states. There have been situations where they've had to track people down in Utah or out in Seattle. This would simply say they can do it through the administration of the nursing home itself. And, of course, they have contact with the licensee and the ownership. So it's expedite the situation. There's also clarification that any money coming in from receivables would be used for the care of the residents and not be diverted to other purposes. Again, the primary purpose here is to protect the safety of the residents in those facilities, and this would make sure that the money is going towards paying for the care providers, paying for the medications and so on necessary to provide good quality care for those residents. One other thing that that this bill does, it was an amendment that was added in the Finance Committee, was brought to us by the hospitals, and it deals with medical cannabis. Medical cannabis is allowed for use in residential facilities, like nursing homes, for instance, or group homes or assisted living, but it remains the law that was passed remains silent on hospitals. And because of that, they do not have immunity from medical cannabis being used in their facilities. And they say that under the current law, they would have to confiscate any kind of medical cannabis on persons who are coming into their care. They would not be able to manage medical cannabis. So we added in this bill hospitals to those who would be provided with that immunity. And if any place should, it should be the hospitals where these medications would more likely be utilized for the care of patients. So that is the bill. I would stand for any questions.
Is there any discussion? Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. I'd like to offer the A1 amendment.
The Secretary will report the A1 amendment.
Senator Dibble moves to amend House File Number 1792 as amended pursuant to Rule 45 adopted by the Senate May 12, 2015 as follows. Page 4, and this is the A1 amendment.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, the A1 amendment contains the provisions that I presented on the floor in Senate file, I believe it's 1771. Yesterday, eight of the nine elements that are some technical and clarifying changes to the medical cannabis bill that we passed the previous year, and this made some updates originating as a agency bill. The last piece that Senator Eakin just described around allowing patients to continue to have access in hospitals to their medical cannabis was contained in that bill as well. It was picked up by amendment in Senator Eakin's underlying bill. So that's, of course, dropped out of this amendment. We don't need to repeat that provision. But it's got those eight provisions. I can step through those if anyone would like, but it's the same as the provision that we adopted yesterday on the floor and sent to the House. I know that Senator Eakin's House counterpart is agreeable to bringing this into his bill, and House leadership is not opposed as well.
Is there any discussion on the A1 amendment? Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you. Madam President, would the author, Senator Dibble, ask?
Senator Dibble will yield. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President, and Senator Dibble. Just a point of clarification, so we're including hospitals now and I understand the bill. This is the same bill that came through the finance, I think not within about the last week and a half. But so just a point of clarification that hospitals will be immune from any prosecution when it comes to medical cannabis because it's still against the federal law. So I'm just wondering if a patient comes to a hospital that is now actually taking medical cannabis, can the hospital refuse that service? Just to understand it. Can they refuse to actually administer it while they're in the hospital?
Senator Dibble.
Madam President, I believe at present they can, but with the guardrails and protections that were passed off the floor yesterday, as well as what is contained in Senator Eakin's bill. This was brought at the request of the Hospital Association, the language developed by the Hospital Association itself. They can provide for immunity for the employees to help with the safe handling and the safe security and also the administration of medical cannabis. I'm not super clear on whether or not they can refuse, but I believe the answer to that question is they would not be able to.
Is there any more discussion? Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President. I do rise to support this bill, and I want to thank Senator Eakin for the clarification regarding hospitals. Because hospitals were not included in the 2014 legislation, they were not considered as residential facilities like nursing homes or assisted living facilities that had been mentioned in the statute. And while the Department of Justice officials have advised the U.S. attorneys not to seek prosecution of health professionals and patients participating in the state medical marijuana programs that are designed to be effective in protecting public health, but because hospitals were not included, it put their employees and patients at great risk. And so I appreciate the clarifying language that has been added to the bill today. Thank you.
Is there any more discussion on the A1 amendment? On the A1 amendment, Senator Eakin.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, I consider the Senator Dibble amendment to be a friendly amendment and would urge member support.
All those in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Is there any more discussion on House File 1792? Seeing no further discussion, the Secretary will give House File 1792 its third reading.
House File Number 1792, a bill for an act relating to health, making changes to provisions governing receivership of nursing homes or certified boarding care homes.
Secretary will take the roll.
was going to say, if you oppose the technical cannabis bill, you may want to vote no on this.
All members having voted that desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 52 ayes and 10 nays, the bill is passed and is titled agreed to. The next bill on special orders is number 80 and general orders, House File 12, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President and members. House File number 12 is what I think you may be familiar with, what's called the Blue Alert Bill. It passed the House some months ago already. It had been brought forward by the concerned families of law enforcement officers. What the bill states, and I think it makes it very clear here, under the establishment, the Commissioner of Public Safety shall establish a blue alert system to aid in the identification, location, and apprehension of an individual or individuals suspected of killing or seriously wounding a local, state, or federal law enforcement officer. The commissioner shall coordinate with local law enforcement agencies and the public and commercial television radio broadcast to provide an effective alert system. Members, this is similar to the child alert system, the Amber Alert system. It's administered by the same people in the Department of Public Safety. There's no cost to this. They're talking that very few of these, fortunately, would be ever used in the state of Minnesota. I think the number is between, on the average, of maybe one and a half or two times a year on an average. So the department was able to take this into their own budgeting process without a problem, and it clearly identifies that they're the agencies that are involved in putting this together. This is still a work in progress. They're required to come out with a policy. The bill requires that, but Madam President, I do have an amendment, the A1 amendment, that I'd like to offer at this time.
Secretary will report the A1 amendment.
Senator Ingebrigtsen moves to amend House File number 12 as follows, page 1, and this is the A1 amendment.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, this is basically bringing this House bill to the Senate the Senate form that I brought this bill before the Judiciary Committee that was worked on by the committee. As you can see, one on line one was simple taking the capital letter off of chapters and going with lowercase letter. The second page, the amendment, basically is redundant in the House bill. It was felt by our committee that in the Senate that it was the definition under the definition subdivision 7 was redundant. It was covered in statute very well all over the place in statute, so this was not needed. I did talk with the Judiciary Chair, and he knows that this amendment's coming forward. And with that, I stand for questions.
Is there any discussion? All those in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Is there any more discussion on the bill? Then the secretary will give House File 12 its third reading.
House File number 12, a bill for an act relating to public safety, creating a blue alert system to aid in the apprehension of those who kill or injure law enforcement officers.
Secretary will take the roll.
Sorry.
All members having voted, the secretary will close the roll. There being 62 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. That's all we're taking up today, members. So is there any announcements? Senator Nenow.
Madam President, I would move pursuant to Rule 5.1 that Senate File 2144 be withdrawn from the Committee on State and Local Government, given a second reading and placed on general orders.
Okay, Senator Nenow, would you explain what that bill is?
Madam President, this is one of several bills that I introduced a little over a week ago that I think is important to get at least one of them up on general order so that we have that available if we need it. This would continue the operations of state government in the event that we do not get a budget completed.
Could you tell us what the underlying bill is, however?
Madam President, that's what the bill would do. There are several more details in that. Would you like me to go into a lot more specifics?
I understand. 214. Senate file 214. 2144.
Madam President, I will request a roll call.
Roll call requested. On the motion to, I'm sorry. This requires 41 votes. Senator Sieben.
Madam President, I would urge members to oppose the Nenow motion. Negotiations are ongoing right now, and they're still, I'm still hopeful that there will be a resolution here shortly, and we will adjourn the session in a timely manner. Without knowing a lot more details about Senator Nenow's bill that's before us, though, I think it would be prudent to vote this down at this time.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, I would urge us to come together on this and support the Nenow motion and bring this bill forward and put it on general orders. It may very well be that we will have a resolution to the discussion going on the budget, but we may not. If we don't get some resolution here pretty quickly in the next 24 hours or so, I think it's very, very tough to see how we get just logistically this budget passed. It is troubling to me to read the comments in the paper this morning of Senator Bach, the majority leader, talking about how polling has shown that Republicans will get blamed for a shutdown. Now, I don't know what polling he's talking about. Senator Sieben, maybe you know, maybe your party did some polling and asked that question, but I've not seen any polling. But I think it is, to me, troubling to see Democrats already saying, well, let's get ready to blame Republicans for a shutdown. We clearly don't want a shutdown. We'd like to get the work of the people done. I think Senator Nenow's bill makes it very clear that we can get through this if we have to have a delay for whatever reason. Let's not punish the people of the state. And I would think the majority party would want to say that as well. Even if you believe, as Senator Sieben does, that we'll get done on time, we should still make the point that we don't want to shut down the state. We don't want the people of the state to go through any kind of protracted negotiation process. Let's do this. Let's be prudent. Let's make sure that the people of the state can rely on the services that they depend on happening. I think it's a good motion. Let's vote in favor of it, and let's get it on general orders.
Senator Peterson-Jay.
Thank you, Madam President. Would Senator Sieben yield?
She will yield. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Sieben, in your comments, you just stated here a few minutes ago that you were hopeful that an agreement would be reached soon. Do you have a time frame or a deadline in your mind, or have you discussed a deadline with the majority leader when that agreement has to be reached by in order for us to finish on time?
Senator Sieben.
Madam President, Senator Peterson, I'm an optimistic person, and I don't have any great insider knowledge here. It's just my assumption that if the leaders are still meeting right now at the governor's mansion, they're hopeful that there will be a resolution.
Senator Peterson.
Madam President, would Senator Sieben continue to yield?
She will yield. Senator Peterson.
So, Madam President, Senator Sieben, if they would reach an agreement by midnight tonight, is it your opinion we can finish the Senate session on time?
Senator Sieben.
Madam President, Senator Peterson, I'm not willing to count through the timing right now to make any firm deadline to say when there needs to be an agreement by. But as I said earlier, I'm hopeful that there still will be an agreement reached.
Senator Nenow.
Madam President, I impose a call of the Senate.
The Senate is under call. Senator Nenow.
Madam President, I move that further proceedings under the call be dispensed with and the sergeants be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The sergeant will bring in the absent members. Further discussion on the motion, I have a list here. Senator Latz. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam President. Would Senator Sieben continue to yield?
She will yield. Senator Peterson.
Well, Madam President and members, I'm concerned with time growing short, and obviously, this body needs ample time to continue to debate the features and bill content that may or may not be in the bills at this point, depending on what type of budget targets are met. So Senator Sieben, the question I have for you, have you had any discussions with the nonpartisan staff in regards to how much time they need to prepare that legislation based on the short calendar that we have?
Senator Sieben.
Madam President and Senator Peterson, I have not.
Senator Hamm. I'm sorry, Senator Peterson.
Madam President, Senator Sieben, or I guess my question is to anybody that serves in the majority, has anybody had that conversation? Thank you, Madam President.
Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Madam President. You could say that a vote for the Nenow motion is a vote for the public to protect their interests and a vote against a shutdown. A vote against this motion would be logically a vote for a shutdown, because you're arguing this is a harmless motion and a harmless bill to protect the public against that possibility. If you don't want to protect the public against that possibility, what is the counter argument? You don't want to protect the public against the possibility of a shutdown. A vote against the Nenow motion is essentially a vote for a shutdown.
Is there any more discussion? Senator Nenow.
Madam President, just for clarity, for the sake of the members, just to clarify exactly what this motion will do. This motion will pull the bill up and put it on the general orders. This is not a vote on the bill itself. We are not voting to support or oppose the bill. We are voting to put the bill on general orders so that in the event that we need to vote on this, the majority leader can special order it, and we can pull it up, send it to the House, they can pass it, and we can keep government running. Most of the members probably recall a couple of years ago when we did not get budgets enacted before the end of the regular session, and the governor did not call us back into special session, which ended up in a somewhat lengthy shutdown. Had a provision such as this been passed and in place, we would have avoided that. Madam President, to Senator Peterson's questions, I can answer those because I had a conversation with Majority Leader Bach just the other day in the retiring room. What Majority Leader Bach told me he was told is that omnibus bills take about a day to get put together. Once the conference committee gets done, they send it over to the revisor's office. They do all the process that they do. It takes about a day. For the big bills, for the large bills, it takes them about 2 days. Now, as I've been wont to do this year, Madam President, I'm going to do a little math for the members here on the floor. We have right now 9 budget conference committees that are meeting. Well, actually, they're not meeting, but they're ready to meet and do the work once we have leadership agreement on targets. 9 of them. The most that staff can work on at any given time is 3 bills. That's all they have staff for. So you've got 9 bills, some of which take a full day, several of which take 2 full days. Today is Wednesday. We have Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. We don't even have targets yet. The conference committees aren't meeting. Why? Because they can't do anything without a budget target. We might get targets tonight. We might get targets tomorrow. We might get targets Friday. Or we might not. Time is running out. All this motion is asking is give us another tool in the toolbox in the event that the clock starts to run out and we just don't have time to get the budgets enacted before the clock strikes midnight Monday night. I would urge a green vote. Thank you, Madam President.
Senator Sam Peterson, Jay.
Thank you, Madam President. Would Senator Sieben yield?
She will yield. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam President. And Senator Sieben, in looking at our directory here, I see you're the Assistant Majority Leader. And I'm reading from the Star Tribune article this morning, and I quote, it says, Bach said he'd seen polling data that would place blame for a shutdown on Republicans, but said it's not his intention. Senator Sieben, have you seen polling data that would tell you the same thing?
Senator Sieben.
Madam President, Senator Peterson, I have not seen that polling data that you're referencing, nor do I think it's especially appropriate to comment on polling data on the Senate floor. But no, I have not seen that polling data myself.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam President. Would Senator Hayden yield?
Senator Hayden. Will Senator Hayden yield? Senator Hayden, will you yield? He will yield. Senator Peterson, Jay.
Thank you, Madam President. Well, Senator Bach is not on the floor, and you know Senator Sieben's a leader in your caucus, and I see Senator Hayden also is a deputy majority leader. Senator Hayden, have you seen any of the polling data that Senator Bach is referencing in the Star Tribune article this morning that appears to blame Republicans for a shutdown?
Senator Hayden.
Well, thank you, Madam President, and Senator Peterson. No, I haven't seen any of the polling data that the Star and Tribune is referencing to the Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam President. Would
Senator Peterson.
Would Senator Eaton yield?
Senator Eaton. She will yield. Senator Peterson, Jay.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Eaton, I see you're the Majority Whip. And according to our directory, I guess the third leader in line with the absence of the majority leader. Senator Eaton, have you seen any of the polling data that references Republicans will be blamed for a shutdown?
Senator Eaton.
I have not seen any polling data.
Thank you,
Senator Peterson. All right, Senator Osmak.
Thank you, Madam President. We've glossed over Section 1 of this bill. Not only would we be maintaining the operations of the state of Minnesota if we don't get our jobs done, Madam President, we also aren't going to be paid as legislators if we don't get our job done. I think people at home need to know that not only are we going to maintain the operations of the Senate and or of the state of Minnesota, we as legislators, if we can't get our job done on time, are not going to be paid. This is a very rational bill. It also incentivizes us to get our job done, and I think people at home need to know that. Thank you.
Okay, members, we are discussing whether we should pull the bill out of committee today. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. Would Senator Sieben yield for a couple of questions, please?
She will yield. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. I do remember the shutdown a couple of years, 3 years back, I believe, and some of the things that were very concerned. We all have this inner circle of real big business that we do here and a very important business. And as soon as the shutdown hit, I want to remind folks what the number one and two issues were on the people's mind. So, Senator Sieben, do you know for sure if the state parks will be closed if we go to a shutdown?
Madam President.
Senator Hayden, for what purpose does the gentleman rise?
I rise for a point of order. Can I ask
state
you
your
what,
point.
What motion and what business is in front of the Senate?
Before the Senate is the Nienau motion to pull Senate File 2144 from the Committee on State and Local Government, give it its second reading, and place it on general orders.
So, Madam President, I appreciate the minority party's inquiry into what the future may look like and what the past was, but I don't think that the line of questioning that we are going down is germane to the motion that is in front of us.
The point of order is well taken. As I mentioned before, please direct your comments to the motion in front of us.
Okay. Madam President.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Then I just have some comments. Madam President, I just wanted to hit home as to how serious this is to the folks out there that may be listening or paying attention. and there's been some real good points brought forward, but some of the things that were brought to my attention were this very issue of shutting the state parks down. We were involved in that. We were also involved in the wayside rest areas. We all know that by the time I even got home that evening that the barricades were put up and the truckers that were traveling through our areas and travelers couldn't even pull off. We also had a real, real big issue, which wasn't a real big issue to me, but it is to the retailers, where beer licenses couldn't be sold. So this is what we're looking at, folks, when we're sitting around here about 4 or 5 days now from closure, from the final day. These are the types of complaints that folks out in the state of Minnesota are concerned about. And, of course, we're now doing some polling on KSTP. We're talking about polling today. I think it's KSTP about who can find the biggest pothole out there. Please send us a picture. Potholes last time, as you remember, were the number one issue. This is how serious this is, folks. And I'm assuming that Senator Bach is not here because he's negotiating right now with the governor and the majority leader over in the House. I can only assume that.
On the motion to pull Senate File 2144 out of the committee, is there any more discussion on that motion? Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam President. I support this motion very strongly. We have a duty to protect the public and to put our business in order here by bringing this bill up and placing it on general orders. We put ourselves in a situation and in a circumstance to protect the public. While we are going through the discussions and the debates, if we do not come to an agreement, it is our duty to protect the public and allow them to keep doing their business. By passing this motion, we do exactly that and make sure that we have things in place in case it is needed. So I support this, put it on the general orders so that if it is needed, we can take quick action to protect the public.
On the motion before us, all those, Senator Latz.
Madam President, there seems to be
roll call requested. Roll call granted. Senator Latz.
There seems to be some discussion that there is an absolute urgency to get this teed up today and on a general orders. And I just want to remind members that we have the luxury, if we need it, Monday, if we ever get to that point, we can pull it out of committee if it's the desire of this body to do so, and to put on general orders on Monday and bring it up for a vote on Monday. So it doesn't take too long to put a golf ball on the tee.
Seeing no further discussion. Senator Westrum.
Well, Madam President, members, Senator Latz, we have got a lot on the tee already for Monday because the negotiations aren't moving along. And Lord willing, a few of the bills will have targets and be concluded. We'll have a lot to do Monday going through potentially all the omnibus bills. And so we have more time today to deal with this and put a provision and a backstop in place to guard against a government shutdown, which is what the Republicans are trying to help guard against by passing this. What you're seeing is DFL opposition to trying to set something in place to guard against a government shutdown. And so, Senator Latz, I would respectfully disagree that we want to wait till Monday to put this golf ball on the tee. We've got a lot waiting to do on Monday the way it's teeing up right now.
Senator Sanchem.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, members, I think we all understand the chemistry of this place. I am not sure, even as we stand here today, that we can get our work done before the appointed deadline. I wouldn't bet $10 on it. Be quite frank with you, because we're at a crisis here, I think. And Madam President, would Senator Sieben yield?
Senator Sieben will yield. Senator Sanchem.
Senator Sieben, thank you for yielding. This is just a kind of a what if. A backstop, if you will. There is absolutely nothing wrong with us passing this at least initiative forward and placing this bill at least on general orders. I think it sends a good signal to the public. And I would offer, and for those of us that have been here for a little while, I remember Senator Cohen, I don't know if he's in the room or not, but Senator Cohen advocated strongly for a lights on bill a couple of years ago, and it was all okay then, but somehow it's not okay today. I understand views and perspectives can change, but I think we're all in this together, and to bring this to the floor today, at least put it on general orders, I think a totally appropriate thing to do. It sends a good message to the public, and I would certainly urge a green vote on this motion.
Seeing no further discussion, Senator Sharon.
I know that we should probably should move to a vote, but I just don't like to leave the framing of this discussion in the form that doesn't fit with what my vote is about. I think that there's plenty of time to take up this proposal. I think we adequately have time on Monday to do this. And what the message is that this sends, that I, what I'm taking away from this pressure from my colleagues on the Republican side is that they just are giving up and are communicating to the DFL side that they do not believe that they will be able to come to the table and resolve the differences in the budget. And that really concerns me that we're taking on that position with this vote at this time. It's way too early from the DFL's perspective to even subtly communicate that with this vote. So I urge a no vote, because the message that I want to communicate is that the DFL continues to be very interested in coming to a resolution before the end of session.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam President. I just feel compelled to respond. I think part of the reason why we felt it was important to bring this up today, if people believe that we are not going to need it, it doesn't do any harm to get this bill put on general orders. But it was concerning when we read in the paper, Senator Bach talking about polling that says, well, polling says the Republicans are going to get blamed if we have a shutdown. You know, I haven't seen any polling on that. I don't think anybody's done any polling. I think that was DFL party polling. Why would they be polling that question? I think they're testing this out as a strategy for negotiation, and we want to send a very clear message that this body, we're not interested in that. We're interested in getting this done. Let's get something ready so that if we need it, we have it. So to Senator Sharon's comment, I think it's pretty clear that to me and to the rest of us on our side that the DFL strategy is to drive into a shutdown because Republicans get blamed. We want to make it very clear that that's not what we're here for. We're here to get the people's work done.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you for the opportunity to respond. There may be some concerns about a statement that was made in the press that people want some response to, but that's not what this is. That's not what the motion is on the table. This is about sending a message to the public that we anticipate a shutdown, and that I hear from the Republicans by wanting to press this now rather than waiting to see if it's really necessary to communicate to the public that you have despaired in your ability to come to the table and negotiate on the final budget resolution. The DFL is not ready to communicate such a message. We believe we have the capacity and the desire and the ability to come to a resolution on the budget before the end of session.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam President, Senator Sharon, and Senator members. I do have to disagree with your statements, and I'll use transportation as an example, members. You know, the Transportation Conference Committee has been meeting quite regularly, and I can read you some of the last agendas here. Just yesterday they met and discussed the Metropolitan Council procurements. They talked about public-private partnerships. They talked about transportation cost share. The previous meeting dealt with various bills that did not really relate to any of the funding. The previous conference committee before that dealt with walkthroughs of the side-by-side. So, members, I think you can understand what I'm saying. If there was one issue that all Minnesotans can agree on this legislative session, it was transportation. Well, members, we've had a majority leader that said we could live without a transportation bill this year. And I'll tell you, most of the 5 million Minnesotans couldn't disagree with the Senate majority leader at all. They disagree with them. Members, we need a transportation funding bill, and it's not getting done. In fact, I just showed you the conference committee has not even talked about how to fund that transportation bill. Members, time is short, and we're trying to point out to Minnesotans and to the majority that, members, the time for that agreement is now. We have to allow ample time We all know that the majority cannot limit the debate of the minority. Members, we simply don't, the time is growing short, and we do not have the time, in my opinion, to finish many of these bills that are being delayed. The time is for that solution and for that agreement now. Members, I would encourage you to support this amendment. It ensures that the state of Minnesota will not shut down. If you're concerned about that, I would encourage you to support the Nenow amendment.
Senator Stump.
Thank you, Madam President. I would just suggest that there are a lot of political ideas out there, and that some of them are, I think, getting closer and closer to where we're going to end up. One of them, I don't know if you read the article about from Doug Groh, talked about how this session is going to end. And it basically lays out a format, I think, on how this session can come together. And I realize that we've got varying parties in this negotiation, but I think some of the ideas, if you go to MinnPost and read that article, he lays out how the different pieces are going to come together. And his ending comment is something like, you know, none of us are actually going to be satisfied with those final numbers. And that's probably right, because our expectations are quite high in some areas. But I think all of us should think about how do we come away from this all being winners in some way. And that's the difficult part. And it's that trying to figure out how you can give something up that you really want and get something that you really can get. And I think my advice to not only our leader, but all the leaders and parties that are trying to negotiate this out, is to be sure to read that article. It talks about the different areas, the big areas such as education and health and human services. It talks about transportation. And there's things that many of us on our side would like that we're not going to get. And I think there's same is true on the other parties as well. So I would say we still have time, and that if we pull this together in the next day or so, we can come away. We're going to have to swallow hard in many cases, but I think we can come away with getting this all done before the end of the session.
Senator Sharon. Okay. Is there any more discussion? Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam President.
Thank you.
Madam President, I hope Senator Stumpf is right, and I hope we do have a pathway to finishing the session. But if you look at what analysts are saying, the governor is following the same strategy that he used in 2011. And where did that lead us? This motion is needed because it tells the people of Minnesota that the Senate and the legislature will be ready to handle the eventuality of a potential government shutdown. If you read the governor's own statements, he seems to be moving farther away from both the House and the Senate positions. And that doesn't give me very much comfort, members. The governor is already calling Republicans intransigent, and yet it's his positions that are being held firm. He seems to be digging in his heels. And members, this motion will send a message to the governor's office that this legislature will not be bullied into a bad deal. We need to stand up. We need to stay as a co-equal branch of government and not let him drive these decisions. And so we need to show the people of Minnesota that we're willing to take proactive action, that we are not going to be doing this at the last minute and hoping that the governor signs it. We're sending a message that we want these negotiations done, and we want the governor to negotiate in good faith.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam President and members. Senator Stumpf, I did take your advice. I found that article that was posted about 11 o'clock this morning. I hope the governor hasn't seen it. I hope Speaker Dowd has not seen it. I hope Senator Bach has not seen it, because they're supposed to be working on setting these budget targets. But Senator Stumpf, Madam President, would Senator Stumpf yield?
Senator Stumpf will yield. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Stumpf, one of the headings in Mr. Groh's article, the journalist that you say has presented the solution to the end of the session, and I hope, boy, I hope our majority leaders and the governor read this article soon. But one of the headings is, hello, bonding bill. You know, Senator Stumpf, do you feel like you have enough time to build a bonding bill that's going to earn two-thirds support of the Senate body?
Senator Hayden.
Madam President, I rise for a point of order. I'd like to know what business is in front of the body.
Thank you for reminding us, Senator Hayden. We've had discussion far afield of the motion before us, so let's get back to the motion about whether we should pull Senate Bill 2144
Madam
from
President,
the committee on state and local
inquiry.
Government. Senator Westrom, for what purpose does the gentleman rise?
Madam President, I rise to a parliamentary inquiry.
State your inquiry.
Madam President, my understanding is when a point of order has been raised, they are supposed to cite the rule or part of Mason's that's being violated. Is that correct or not?
That's correct. I think more properly, it might have been Senator Hayden might have been a point of inquiry.
Madam President, thank
Senator
you for
Westrom.
That advice. I didn't hear Senator Hayden refer to any rule.
He could be looking for one now. Senator Peterson, in the meantime.
Thank you, Madam President. Just in response to Senator Hayden's concern, I would just remind members I was responding to a solution that was brought up by one of the committee chairs on the floor, referencing that we have a journalist here that has laid out a map and a solution for the end of session, which questions if there's going to be a bonding bill. And my question
Madam
for
President.
The chair of the bonding committee is that simply if
Excuse
we have
me,
enough
Senator
time.
Senator Hayden, for what yeah. purpose does the gentleman rise?
Well, thank you, Madam President. I rise now for a point of order. Madam President, I am looking at Mason Section 101 that says that the debate is limited to the questions before the body. And so with that, also, Madam President, there's Mason Section 102 says a member has a right to only speak once on a question. And so, Madam President, I appreciate once again, the history lesson and the points of inquiry of members in terms of how their conference committees are going and what the timing is. However, it does appear that we are not in our rules relative to the question that's before the body.
Thank you, for Senator Hayden, for pointing out the section in Mason's. It has usually been our custom to try to restrict our debate to the motion that is before the body. So once again, I think your point of order is well taken. Senator Peterson, please try to restrict your comments. And members, now I've let you we've ranged kind of far afield. Now let's bring it back now to the motion before the body.
Thank you, Madam President. Would Senator Stumpf yield?
Senator Stumpf will yield.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Stumpf, do you feel like you have enough time to build a bonding bill that would earn two-thirds support of the Senate?
Senator Peterson, that's not the motion before the body is whether Senate File 2144 should be withdrawn from the Committee on State and Local Government, given a second reading, and placed on general orders. Please restrict your questions to that motion.
Yeah, thank you, Madam President. Members, I think the folks that I happen to serve in central Minnesota, you know, do think it's a relevant question simply because Senator Stumpf brought it up as a solution to why we should not be supporting Senator Nienau's motion. Senator Nienau's motion gives every member in this body the chance to keep the state of Minnesota's government from shutting down if they would pass it off, bring it to the floor today with Senator Nienau's motion. Of course, we have members in the chamber that are saying that that's not necessary because we have time to do the work yet that the Minnesotans are expecting us to do. One of the solutions that Senator on this floor raised is that there's a journalist that has laid out a solution for these negotiations in the final days. And one of the headings in his article clearly says a bonding bill is going to be part of the solution. So the question I was asking was responding to what the chairman of the Capital Investment Committee raised, if he has time to build a bonding bill that's going to earn the support of a large percentage of this body.
All right, let's just wrap this conversation up and then move to a vote. Senator Stump.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Peterson, the answer is yes. As you know, last year's bonding bill, even as large as it was, with the two pieces coming to almost $1.2 billion, we had lots of projects that still were left on the table. And this year, in visiting with the House chair of the Capital Investment Committee, I think most of the direction that both of us are taking is to try to put an emphasis on the infrastructure of the state of Minnesota. And I think that is a very basic kind of a plan for a bonding bill this year. And I think it'll draw the support of a majority of our legislators in both bodies to support. And so my answer is simply yes to that.
The motion before the body. Okay, now we've had enough discussion. Let's stick to the motion before the body. Senator Benson.
And Madam President, to the motion before the body, this is one step in assuring the public that there will be an orderly process with which to keep this government running. This is step one. It is showing that you're not going to play politics. The majority leader of this body said there was a poll that would put the blame on his political opponents if the government shut down. Let's take that off the table. Let's put this on general orders and show that we are prepared to do the orderly thing. Everybody's talking about how much work we can get done in these last days. That is not transparent for the public. It does not offer them the opportunity to fully understand what is going on in conference committees. Madam President and members, decisions made at 2 o'clock in the morning are not necessarily good decisions. We have seen what happens when things get rushed, things get snuck in conference committee, and there are recriminations for that for years to come. This is step one in keeping the trust of Minnesotans and having an orderly exit to this legislative session. We need to support this motion, members.
Secretary will take the roll on the motion before us. All members having voted.
Madam President.
We're in the middle of a roll call.
Absentees. And then I'm
absentees.
Gonna,
right.
And then I'm going to ask who has been requested to be excused for the day.
Requested to be excused are Requested to be excused, Senator Tomasoni, Senator Cohen, Senator Bach. We are under call. Members are requested to vote. The remaining members have been requested to be excused. The secretary will close the roll. There being 28 ayes and 36 noes, the motion does not prevail. Announcements. Senator Latz.
Madam President, I just wanted to point out that under Mason, Section 243, on the form of point of order, that the member should state the point as briefly and concisely as possible, citing the authority for the point whenever possible. So Senator Westrom's rising to a point of order without citing the authority for his point of order was appropriate, but his point that one had to cite the authority for the point of order should not have been well taken, and indeed was not.
It was an inquiry.
Without objection, the following members will be excused
Madam
from
President,
today's session.
I object.
Senator Peterson B., 11 to 11:30. Senator Westrom, 11 to 11:30. Senator Bach, Cohen, Tomasoni, all day. Senator Ortman, 11 to 11:40. Senator Brown, 11 to 11:45. Any further announcements?
Madam President.
Senator Westrom.
I'd like to announce Senator Latz is half wrong. I'd like to correct him. What I think he thought I did is rose to a point of order. I rose to a point of parliamentary inquiry. Just to correct what he cited, I did not rise to a point of order under the situation or scenario he was referring to.
Are there any other announcements? Senator Sieben.
Madam President, I move that the Senate do now adjourn until Thursday, May 14th at 11 a.m.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The Senate stands adjourned.